Hello, bonjour. My name is Thierry Meyer from Lunatech Alsace in Strasbourg. I was born and currently live in Alsace. I've been tasting a lot of Alsace wine, and I love to share my passion for this great diversity in Alsace wines. My website, enoalsace.com, is including a lot of tasting notes for Alsace wines, and you can also find me on Facebook on my Thierry Meyer Eno Alsace page.
Welcome to Wine and Dine. My name is Lynn Crelo Chamberlain, host. You're listening to iWine Radio. There are several lucky people who have participated in the French Wine Society's Alsace Master Level Program, and they are about to embark shortly on an immersion study trip in Alsace, which will be hosted by lead instructor Thierry Meyer. He's joining us today from his home in Alsace. There are several points that we're going to bring up that might somewhat blow your mind, in that, you know, people, what they think they know about Alsace is incorrect. We will have links up to this program at the French Wine Society, because it started, the study program started in March, and the trip is leaving in mid-June, or begins in mid-June. But surely Julien Camus will offer this program again. And I don't know the next date, if it won't be until 2015 spring, or if he's going to offer it again in 2014. But we'll have that information up for you. I'm going to give you a little bit of background on Thierry himself. And he was born and raised in Alsace. And he began writing about wine in 1999. In 2001, he started a signature dinner series dedicated to Alsace wine. And in fact, he is very, very passionate about this idea of pairing wine with food and the gastronomy of Alsace. He is also one of the most comprehensive modern resources dedicated to Alsace in his website, Linotech Alsace. And he teaches master classes and master dinners dedicated to specific themes. And he organizes visits to local vineyards in order to discover the unique geological complexity of Alsace. So if you're, you know, you don't have to be a part of this program with French Wine Society. If you'd like to visit Alsace and learn more about Alsace, Thierry Meyer is definitely your go-to person. And Thierry, thank you so very much for your time today.
Thank you very much. Bonjour, everyone. One thing you forgot to mention is that I basically got interested in wine when I was living in the U.S. Back in 93 and 94. I was lucky enough to do my national service. At that time, it was possible to do a non-military one, and I was working at the Embassy of France in Washington, D.C., and I was, as such, involved in a lot of business lunch and business dinners, and I was really amazed because people were telling you, hey, you're the Frenchman, why don't you choose the wine? And I was sometimes quite ridiculous. I remember drinking Back to France at Beaujolais, and then we went to this famous Michelin star restaurant in New York City, and the sommelier came to me, and I asked, well, do you have this specific Beaujolais called Chirouble? And the sommelier told me, well, we don't carry that kind of wine here. So this basically was probably the spark that created my interest for wine. And when I came back to Europe in 1996, I met a Canadian guy, a French-Canadian guy, who basically told me that he was writing everything he was drinking on a paper. And I was thinking, hey, why not try that as well? And then since 1997, I have plenty of small notepads with all the wines I've been drinking. And I just shortly noticed that, you know, basically if you do business lunch and business dinners every now and then, plus family gathering and other personal events, you basically end up being exposed to a lot of wines, even if you don't really care, but you just drink, you know, 15, 20 different wines every month. So that's how my passion grew. And then, of course, being from Alsace, I was really amazed by the diversity of all the Alsace wines. And I started to get more interested about that and sharing this passion.
Thierry, what were you studying in college? What were you doing before you came to do your national service in D.C. at the embassy?
No, well, my original education is one that is quite classical in French. I've been going through the scientific track and going to engineering school. Okay. I was majoring in data analysis and statistics, and also back to the late 80s and early 90s, I was already working in this IT software development field that was a growing trend at the time.
Wow.
And since then, I've been working then. I work mostly as an IT consultant in several companies, and I'm still doing that as my main job, actually. Although, you know, that's what I tell to my banker, but from a professional perspective, I would rather see myself as a wine educator.
Yes.
It's good to have another job, you know, aside.
Of course. It's always good to diversify. Now, let me ask you, I'm just now learning the software program called Alice. Do you know Alice? A-L-I?
No.
Alice. It's a program that teaches you the introduction to programming.
Okay. Oh, do you mean the program from the MIT?
I think it's Carnegie Mellon.
Okay, Carnegie Mellon.
Yeah. Anyway, I don't know anything. I know very little about programming, but how fascinating. And I would imagine then that your tasting notes are very methodical and sequential.
Well, some people tend to say that I have a good combination of sharp analytical skills together with some hedonistic.
Yeah.
And probably people who can see me and know, you know, that I'm a little bit overweight, they know that I'm really enthusiastic about dining and drinking. So, yeah, I think this is a good combination, probably.
Okay, if I were to ask you one question, and I have many, many, but I think that this is probably, from what I'm reading about your background, this is probably something that bothers you more than anything, and that is, if you were to talk to a group of people who were wine drinkers, what would be the one thing that you would say that they probably have a misconception about Alsace, traditionally held image of Alsace? What do you want people to know that is different from what most people think?
Well, I think nowadays, especially in the press, you read a lot of articles about Alsace wines being too sweet or Alsace wine being sweet, and sometimes you don't know whether they should be sweet or dry. I think this is a long debate that has occurred in France that even now is translating or traveling across the oceans, and everybody's talking about residual sweetness in Alsace wines. And this is something that tend to annoy me a little bit because people focus too much on residual sweetness.
Yeah.
They don't focus enough on the aromas, on the palate, on the minerality, on the other aspects like on the saltiness, on the tannins that even white wine can have. And I think this is, if you just try to read Alsace wines with glasses that analyze both acidity and residual sugar, you might end up with a really simple view of Alsace wines. So Alsace wines are not only made of acid and sugar, there is much more to that. And I think sweetness, of course, might be a problem if you want to, you know, let's say, drink a dry Riesling with some fish and you end up with a sweet Riesling. Of course, this is not the best thing to do.
Yeah.
But then, of course, there are many other things, especially terroir in Alsace, that may be worth understand first. Especially when you talk about, for example, seafood.
Yeah.
You probably know that people in Bordeaux area, they like oysters a lot, probably like on the East Coast too. And people are really fond of drinking Chateau Yquem with oysters, which might be quite strange. Why should we drink a sweet wine with oysters? But actually, let's forget about the sweetness. It's basically the terroir. You know, the limestone terroir brings enough acidity and minerality to go really well with oysters. So that's one conception that people should really change. It is a mindset change that is really required to stop just trying to find residual sugar to prove that you are a strong and knowledgeable amateur and just try to focus more on the overall balance of the wine and what kind of food it can go with.
Do you know Tim Hannay, Master of Wine?
By name only. I haven't met him, unfortunately.
He does a tremendous amount of research that is venotyping, where he is somewhat similar to what you're saying, is forget this idea of categorizing by sweetness and dryness, but he goes at it from the angle of what does the person like, rather than, as you're stating, the terroir. So if we were going to forget about Sauternes, what kind of wines in that same vein of minerality and terroir coupled with the acidity and the sweetness from Alsace would you recommend people try with the oysters?
Well, you know, just like to give, I don't want to go into too many details, but just like to keep in mind, you have three kinds of soils overall in the world. You have soils that are metamorphic or that come from the earth, from the ground of the earth. You have sedimentary soils. And the sedimentary soils are mostly made from seashells. So when you have a terroir made from seashells deposit, of course, it usually goes well with the seafood. So I would go for limestone terroir, limestone-dominated terroirs.
Okay.
And in Alsace, we have plenty. We have Grand Cru like the Rosacaire Grand Cru, which is the home of the famous Riesling Clos Saint-Une from Trimbach. We also have other terroirs like Fürstentum or Steinert. All these carry, of course, German-like names. And then once you have found the terroir, you can go for example, a Riesling, because then you might have maybe extra acidity compared to other grape varieties we have in Alsace. But even if the wine has, let's say, 10, 15, 20 grams of residual sugar, if the wine has enough saltiness and enough power in the acidity, I think this won't be a problem. On the other hand, if you go for a simple terroir coming from the plain, coming from a riverbed rock soil, for example, yes, that might be quite simple, and maybe the wine may lack structure to the point that if it has, let's say, 10 grams or even 7 grams of residual sugar, of course, then you might feel that it's a bit too sweet. So I think this is maybe just the wrong problem. Sweetness is not the problem, as long as you choose the right terroir.
Okay, now go back to this concept of saltiness. Talk to us about saltiness.
Well, this is something that is quite interesting when you start to talk about the taste of the wine, because usually we say, you know, Alsace wines are non-oaked, they're very aromatic and dry wines, so people tend to focus a lot on the aromas. And yes, we have 7 major grape varieties that provide lots of aromas, but you should also focus on the taste that everyone has. And if you try to focus on the acidity, then you will notice that you have a lot of different acidity. And this can become quite complex.
Thierry, we're going to go to a short break here. When we come back, we're going to pick up this conversation, okay?
All right.
Okay, we will be right back. You're listening to Wine and Dine.
Hello, my name is Olivier Umbrecht. I'm a master of wine and the owner winemaker at Domaine Zindumbrecht in Alsace. If you want, you can learn more about our wines on our website, zindumbrecht.com.
Bonjour, my name is Jean Albrecht. I am the proprietor and the winemaker of Domaine Lucien Albrecht. I am the 18th generation. I invite you to enjoy my wine and visiting my website, lucien-albrecht.com. Yes, exactly.
Bonjour à tous, Richard Canemaché du Conseil interprofessionnel des vins d'Alsace. Apprenez-en davantage sur les vins d'Alsace en vous connectant sur www.alsacewine.com. Vous saurez tout sur les vins d'Alsace.
Thank you for listening to iWine Radio. I'm Lynn Crelo Chamberlain. Welcome to Wine and Dine. We are continuing our conversation with Thierry Meyer, and you can find him on the web at enoalsace.com, enoalsace.com. And we were just talking about saltiness in wine. And so when Thierry, so many people, they mistakenly say that something tastes like raspberries or whatever, but that's an aroma. Sweet, sour, bitter, salty, umami on the taste. And you're saying, yeah, the saltiness. But you have to, you can't just be guzzling down wine. You have to really kind of listen and pay attention to what's in your mouth, right?
Yes, exactly. So that's why sometimes, you know, we learn how to do this three steps approach to wine tasting. First, you look at it, then you smell, and then you take a sip. Sometimes maybe it would be just good to just look at the wine and take a sip, and then you can maybe focus on the aromas next. And of course, when you notice the vocabulary we use for wine tasting notes, we have hundreds of adjectives and hundreds of words to describe the aromas. And sometimes with the balance in the mouth, which can be sometimes multidimensional, we are really lacking vocabulary, right, to describe the different kinds of acidity and saltiness you can have.
Yeah.
I think the best example people give me sometimes, they say, oh, you know, a Riesling in Alsace is a really good dry wine with some acidity, grapefruit and citrus aromas.
Yes.
And sometimes you have a little bit of residual carbon dioxide. So you have, it's slightly, you may have some bubbles when the wine is young. So what I do is I just take a bottle of sparkling water, I add some sugar, I add some lemon juice and some orange juice, and I just shake it. And I just ask them, okay, is this what you're talking about? And then they say, well, that, yeah, this has citrus and orange, and it has some acidity and some sweetness and some bubbles. But then they go back to the Riesling and they say, well, you know, the Riesling has something extra. So that's what I say when I say, you know, you cannot just highlight the acidity, the sweetness of the wine as the major component, because there is so much more in the acidity. And I think for me, the best way to experience that is to actually taste wines. Taste wines, but taste two at a time. Take two glasses, buy two terroirs, two Riesling from the same vintage so you don't change too many attributes. Take, for example, a wine from a limestone soil like Rosacker, the Grand Cru Rosacker we have in Alsace in the village of Unavire. Take another soil from that comes from a granite soil, for example, like the Grand Cru Brandt or the Grand Cru Frankstein, and just make yourself your experience. And usually when I have master classes, I test all the wines blind. And when you have two pairs of wine with this difference of limestone and granite, for example, people really feel the difference between granite and limestone soil acidity. And then you give them another wine and you ask them, well, do you think this is rather a granite or rather limestone? Even inexperienced people can know exactly what's going on. So, I mean, for me, this is really eye-opening because people may think, oh, this terroir thing is too complex for me.
Yeah.
I think it's complex unless you taste. And if you have a chance to taste, if you have a good wine shop, liquor store near you, and you can find different kind of terroir for Alsace Grand Cru wines, then you will find that it's quite easy to recognize all these differences. Mm. So I think it's just a question of exercising.
Do you actually have people from around the world that commission visits and trips, organized trips with you? So you do this other times throughout the year, not just for like French Wine Society?
Yeah, well, on top of French Wine Society, I organize two kinds of events. I usually do a couple of public tastings every year. So we do tastings called masterclass with a specific topic. Sometimes it's a terroir, sometimes it's like revisiting a specific vintage. Like for example, last year we had a Pinot Noir 2003 tasting, horizontal tasting, so we could see how the famous Pinot Noir from the great vintage 2003 evolved over the last 10 years. And then I also have some, dinners, specific dinners, where you usually have a typical dinner has five or six courses with two wines per course. So we can compare, as I said, and we can try to find fantastic matches because with all the styles we have in Alsace, you can find endless combinations. And then I'm doing a couple of on-demand private tours. It can go from, let's say, two or three people, especially people from the U.S. who are really passionate about wine, who want to visit the region for a couple of days, or it can be for larger groups. I had groups from Finland, I had groups from Spain, from Italy. It depends. Now I hope I will get people from Asia this year.
We're
discussing. So I think, you know, what came as a truth for me is that basically Americans, Europeans, Asians are sometimes more passionate about wine, especially, complex regions like Alsace. And they're more passionate than French people themselves, because French people, of course, they believe they know everything, and they don't have this, this open mind to really trying to seek to understand. They come with their prejudgment and all conventional wisdom they can read in the newspaper. So I think this is really, for me now, I'm working more and more with different foreign countries because this is where the most interest finds.
Yeah. Mm. So in Alsace, there are five sub-regions, 13 grape varieties, and over 200 terroir types?
Well, I think this is just, this is a data analytic definition. I think we can summarize the grape variety. We can sort them into seven or go all the way down to 13. It depends how you split.
Okay.
So I think it's always a question of how deep you want to go. For example, we have one grape variety called Muscat, but it can have two flavors. You have the Muscat d'Alsace called Muscat Petit Grain, et cetera, et cetera. Mm-hmm. The same goes for terroir. We can split terroir in three major families, or we can go to 13 families. But if you go even deeper, try to understand the combination of soil, then you need to go to 200 plus or even more. So this is quite complex.
Do you like sparkling wines? I'm particularly fond of sparkling wines.
So sparkling wines is really a key driver of the Alsace wine production, because we have one appellation created in 1976 called Crémant d'Alsace, which is basically using the same method than in Champagne, with a minimum aging on the lees that is 9 months. So this is a bit shorter than in Champagne, but it's still producing quite good sparkling wine. And nowadays, Crémant d'Alsace represents 25% of the Alsace wine production.
Wow, that high.
And over the last, let's say, 30 years, since the appellation was created in 1976, I think it's been going through a constant increase every year, moving from 1% to 25%. So this is quite a huge success, and I think the reason why it's a huge success is because, of course, from a climate point of view, we have those cool nights in the fall season that allows the wine to keep good acidity and good freshness. And we also have a good selection of terroir, again, that allow us to produce fresh wines, especially with the Champagne method. The last thing, of course, is that Crémant d'Alsace costs way
less.
Much less than,
yeah.
Than Champagne. Yeah, and then you can find for, I don't know, the maybe the U.S. price, you can find for less than $10 or maybe $10, $12, you can find really good Crémant d'Alsace.
Boy, I have never seen it that low, but I sure would jump on it if I could see it that low. But Tilly, the grape varieties that are used for the Crémant d'Alsace, is it like Pinot, or of course Chardonnay, Pinot Gris, Pinot Blanc, Pinot Noir, recently Sylvaner? Tell us the different grape varieties.
So all these, all the grape varieties you mentioned, excepted Sylvaner, can be used for Crémant. Most of the Crémant is done with a blend of Pinot Blanc and Pinot Auxerrois. So these are two kinds of flavors of Pinot Blanc.
Okay.
Basically, Pinot Blanc brings the structure and the acidity, and Auxerrois brings the aromas, the floral aromas, and the fruit.
Okay.
Chardonnay cannot be used in Alsace for anything else than sparkling.
Okay.
It's not possible to find a still wine made from Chardonnay,
okay.
Although maybe some, you know, some producers may have a couple of bottles behind their cellar,
yeah.
Of course, which the participants of the immersion trip will hopefully have a chance to taste.
Oh.
But like Chardonnay is done to do Blanc de Blanc, and it's used to do specific Chardonnay cuvée.
Okay.
Now, there is also this growing trend of sparkling rosé wines.
Oh, yes.
And now more and more, I think for the last 5 to 6 years, rosé crémant, rosé sparkling is getting really, really fashionable.
Wow.
And now this production increases quite a lot. So Pinot Noir, from a, let's say, macroeconomic point of view, Pinot Noir is getting more and more used for crémant rosé.
Okay.
And this has an impact, of course, on the production of red Pinot Noir.
We're almost out of time. I have another question that I really want to squeeze in here, and that is the fact that you are so fortunate in having the opportunity to taste a lot of old wines, and you want people to know that Alsace wines age and improve significantly with age.
Yes. So that's maybe a misconception that people have. They believe that Alsace wines are supposed to be drunk within 1 year, and I think this was the case until 1982, basically. Because the wines were bottled in February, March following the harvest, and they were drunk until, let's say, December the next year. Now, I think I would say the same in all the regions. If you go to Bordeaux, most of the Bordeaux wines are supposed to be drunk within a few years, right? If you take a generic Bordeaux, this is exactly what it's meant for.
Yeah.
It's meant to be drunk within 2 or 3 years. And most of Alsace wines is the same. Now, if you go to the other hand of these, let's say, top 5% or 10% of the great wines, of course, those wines require 10, 15 years of cellaring. And if you find the right vintage, the right terroir, they can live up to 100 years without any problem.
Mm.
I am part of the Wine Brotherhood Confrérie Saint-Étienne, which is the oldest confrérie in Alsace. And we have a huge wine cellar made of 65,000 bottles all the way down to the 19th century. And every now and then we need to recork some bottles. So I was lucky enough to recork some Pinot Gris, some Toqué Pinot Gris from 1893. So that was like 110 years old. And we had two bottles, and very interestingly, the two bottles were still tasting quite well.
Oh, my
gosh. So this is, let's say this is quite unusual. But usually, I would say, I have in the cellar of L'Onothèque Alsace for our tasting, I have a lot of wines from the 60s, which had great vintages. And we will try some 64, 66, and 67 when we have the immersion trip in a few weeks from now.
Tilly Meyer of Alsace, we'd like to thank you so very much for joining us this week on Wine and Dine. You're just a joy to talk to. I could listen to you for ages. And the people who are joining you on this trip are going to have a blast.
Oh, I'm sure they will. Thank you very much, Lynn.
We will have links up for you to learn more. And if you would like to join up with him separately, we will have that link up to his website. You're listening to iWine Radio.
Hello, I'm Julien Camus, founder of the French Wine Society. We offer online and in-classroom education about the wines of France through our network of 25 schools in the US, Canada, and now Asia. If you would like to learn more about our programs, please visit our website at www.frenchwinesociety.org. Merci and santé.